Donald Trump has opened the door and the billionaires have stepped out of the shadows. They're no longer controlling politics from the back room. They're out there in full view, utterly shameless, controlling politics from the front. And the little you possess, they're coming after that too. Elon Musk has a fortune of over $400 billion. But now he's in charge of this extra-governmental agency called DOGE, whose point is to slash spending right across government. And he says, yeah, we have to live within our means. That's why we need to cut this spending. No, he doesn't mean we. He means you. Elon Musk won't be cutting spending on the military-industrial complex. It won't be cutting spending on the vast military aid to Israel to pursue its genocide. It won't be cutting subsidies for billionaire-owned businesses, including Elon Musk's own businesses. Oh, no. The purpose of the spending cuts, which Musk and Trump are trying to force through, is to cut taxes for the ultra-rich, cutting the spending which will benefit the working classes and the middle classes in America. Never has class war in the modern era been so blatantly and crudely waged. This is the billionaires against the rest. And though they are few in number, the billionaires are winning. It's so crude, it's so blatant, it's so obvious. But because they've found this cast iron means of distraction, people aren't seeing it. And the distraction is the oldest trick in the book, scapegoating. You point the finger elsewhere. But you can see the villains. They're there in plain sight. They were there sitting beside Trump at the inauguration. Those are the people causing the problem. But no, it's the immigrants. It's the Muslims. Disabled people. Oh yes, the disabled people. They're going to take your money away. There's an endless list of possible scapegoats who you could point the finger at. And what Musk and his ilk have discovered, these conflict entrepreneurs, is that what counts for their supporters is not whether they're gaining or losing, it's whether they're losing less than the designated outgroups. The MAGA diehards and indeed the supporters of the far right everywhere, they don't mind how much pain they take as long as someone else is taking more pain, and that pain is being inflicted performatively and visibly. So you can see that person suffering. Yeah, I've got less money in my pocket than I had before because it's going to the billionaires. But that person, they're going to be thrown into Guantanamo Bay for having the temerity to be an immigrant to this country. And that's what you like to see. This is a sadopopulism which covers up the realities of the great heist which is being perpetrated on the ordinary working and middle class people. You point to the scapegoat and people say, yes, kill the beast, kill the beast. But the beast is the one speaking to them. When Musk gave his two Nazi salutes, and let's face it, these were Nazi salutes, let's not pretend. There was this endless debate in the media. Did he really mean it? I mean, is that what he was really intending to do? Perhaps it was just an awkward gesture. I mean, he is a bit of an awkward guy. Hang on. Just look at what he says. Look at who he aligns with. Look at his support for the neo-fascists in Germany. Look at his support for Tommy Robinson, this fascist agitator. Look at the way he's constantly trying to whip up civil war, which he hopes the far right will win. What is that, if not fascism? I mean, ultimately, it doesn't matter what you call it. You can stick labels on and you can not stick labels on. But what we see is someone who is directly attacking all our interests and trying to create a system which works for the billionaires and the billionaires alone. Musk, Trump and their like, they will not be happy until the billionaires have everything and we have nothing. So in the past, the billionaires, the oligarchs, they stayed in the shadows. They secretly funded the fascists, the Nazis, to do their dirty work for them. But now they've come out in the open. They don't need to be afraid anymore because the age of shame is over. They can overtly support Trump and the other far-right demagogues. They can line up. They can attend his court. They can kiss his ring. In fact, they feel obliged to kiss the ring. And this is what we're seeing with Mark Zuckerberg, a man of no clear fixed morals anyway, but someone who is absolutely happy to prostrate himself before Trump, to help pay for Trump's inauguration in order to appease him and make sure that Trump doesn't come after him. Please don't hurt my business. Please don't restrict my monopolistic model, because it does very nicely for me. Thanks, Mr. Trump. Great. We're all on the same side. Team MAGA. Okay? Team MAGA.
We're going to work with President Trump to push back on governments around the world that are going after American companies and pushing to censor more.
We thought we had it bad enough with the established media moguls, people like Rupert Murdoch, people who use their massive economic power to try to drive society towards the right, drive it towards friendliness to capital. But what we now find is that the social media moguls, they are even more powerful because they can get deeper into our minds. They recruit us against our own interests. They are able, minute by minute, to influence the way we think, to drive into the forefront of our minds the issues that they want us to concentrate on. And Elon Musk is totally unashamed about this. He used his platform to help elect Donald Trump. He has used it to become a kind of unelected co-president of the United States. Mark Zuckerberg, he has made it absolutely clear that he's going to do Trump's bidding as well. And in some ways, is just as dangerous, even if he isn't so overtly evil as Elon Musk. These people have unprecedented power. They make the media moguls of old look like pussycats by comparison to what they are able to do. The psychological warfare that they can wage is something which democracies are completely unprepared to combat. One of the things which these tech oligarchs have been able to do is to create a global model which can be rolled out simultaneously globally. At least in the old days, you might have some fascist states which might be opposed by some non-fascist states. But the real fear now is that they're able to just create a fascist globe. There's no state which is going to combat that because they all get captured by the same tech oligarchical capital nexus which dominates in the United States, in Italy, in Hungary, in India, in Argentina, in so many parts of the world simultaneously. And it's the same model, you know, they don't have to invent anything new. In fact, they use these international networks whose precise purpose is to roll that model out. Like, for instance, the Atlas Network, which brings together all these extreme right-wing so-called think tanks, these lobby groups acting on behalf of corporate and oligarchic capital, and it comes up with strategies. It says, here is how politics is going to change, and we can apply this strategy whether we're in Argentina or whether we're in Hungary. It doesn't make any difference. It's the same approach. We can see Trump as some kind of alien who's landed from another planet and is just tearing our politics up. Or we could understand him. I see him as the product of a long-running political force called neoliberalism. And neoliberalism, which has dominated our politics since the 1980s, tells us government shouldn't solve your problems. We should leave that to this magical entity called the market. It's not really a market at all. It's actually just economic power. And unfortunately, politicians of all stripes have succumbed to this hegemonic ideology. And in the US, after a while, it ceased to matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. You were a neoliberal. Bill Clinton was a neoliberal. Barack Obama, a neoliberal. Hillary Clinton, a neoliberal. Joe Biden, a neoliberal. Kamala Harris, a neoliberal. They all basically, with some variations, stuck to that neoliberal script. And when governments will not make the interventions required to solve poverty, to solve environmental crisis, to solve the housing crisis, to solve the health crisis, to solve the education crisis, well, then people give up on them. They say, we don't want conventional politics anymore. We want a maverick. We want someone unconventional. We want someone who's going to rip up the rule book because the rule book is not working for us. Now, of course, the paradox is, as a result of the corruption of politics by money, you end up with the ultimate corruption of politics by money, which is Donald Trump. These new demagogues, they don't in any way solve the problem, but you can see how they are a product of the problem. There's one thing you could say for Donald Trump. He plunges in there. I mean, he plunges in there in an evil and horrendous way, but he's determined to change things, to change the whole system. But throughout the time, when the Democrats have been in charge, when Labour has been in charge here, they've been saying, oh, we can't change the system. No, no, the most you can hope for is a bit of incremental change, but not so much that you actually interfere with the profit-making machine. We can't change society. We can't change the basis of the economy. We can't change politics. They're constantly telling us to want less, to expect less. And what Trump is constantly telling his supporters is more and more and more.
Could you imagine Biden doing this? I don't think so.
That's a big one. So this is a big one. That's a big one. Okay, that's a big one.
That's a good one.
That's a big one. A lot of big ones, huh?
But one thing Trump has shown is you can do a lot in politics if you choose to. So why is it that the liberals and the centrists choose to do almost nothing, while people like Trump try to do almost everything? There's something to be learnt there. The only way we're going to fight these people is to build our own politics. And we have to build it from the grassroots up, from our local communities, from our neighbourhoods. Start creating political communities where we have direct and ongoing political control over our own lives. Participatory, deliberative democracy, taking back control over the land that surrounds us, over the crucial resources. There are different ways of doing this in different places, but we have to create billionaire-proof spaces and then start building outwards from there, linking them up, creating alternative poles of power into which the billionaires can't intrude. Because if we don't do that, they will take everything.